As we kick off the 48th week of our 4.5-year journey through God's inspired word, we are in the book of Joshua, chapter number 11. We are looking at how Joshua was able to defeat the fortified cities, the main fortified cities of Canaan within the first few years of Israel's entrance into the Promised Land. And it happened in basically two phases. First of all, the southern Canaanites got a coalition together. Jerusalem seemed to be the head of that coalition. And they were going to attack the Gibeonites, who appealed to Joshua for assistance. And so Joshua sweeps in, saves the Gibeonites, destroys each of the cities of this southern alliance, along with their kings, and an associated group of other fortified cities that were down in the southern region. That may have taken a couple of years to get all of that taken care of. Now, the northern region will be taken over in a similar fashion because an alliance is formed here in chapter number 11 by the northern fortified cities of Canaan. And the head of this group will be the king of Hazor. Now, Hazor is located roughly 10 miles north of the Sea of Galilee, and it is the largest archaeological site in northern Israel. This ancient city has an upper city, that would be the rich part of town where the palace is located, of about 30 acres. But its lower city, the area where a lot of the commerce would take place and the common people lived, was 175-plus acres. It is a massive tell, a massive mound of occupation ruins that are still being dug up at this point. I really loved being able to go to Hazor the first year that I went to Israel because we got up on the upper tell and could see the burned palace of Hazor. Could actually see the burn layer from the time of Joshua. Well, let's talk about how all of that happened by reading in chapter 11, verse 1. When Yabin, king of Hazor, heard of this, meaning he heard about how Joshua is now in control of Canaan from Shechem southward, he sent to Yobab, king of Madon, and to the king of Shimron, and the king of Aksaph. Now, these cities seem to be located across Galilee. And to the kings who were in the northern hill country. Now, the northern hill country would be the region immediately north of the Shechem area. Now, remember, Joshua and the Israelites have control of the Shechem area. That's where they did their blessing and cursing ceremony in the fall of their first year in the country. But there's hill country in a band of about, I think it's 15 miles or so, north of Shechem, that was still under Canaanite control. So this northern alliance reaches out to the kings immediately north of the Israeli-occupied area. Not just there, though. Continuing. And in the Arabah, south of Kinneroth. Now, the Arabah, think the Jordan Valley. And Kinneroth is just another name for the Sea of Galilee. So this is the area that includes the big fortified city we know of as Bethshan. And so that is on the eastern end of what becomes the Plain of Jezreel, and then farther west, the Plain of Megiddo. And this is the breadbasket of northern Canaan. It's where a lot of the grain fields are going to be located. And then in the lowland, which is down in the Jordan Valley, apparently, and in Naphoth Dor on the west. Now, Naphoth means heights, so the heights of Dor on the west. And this is not Dor, which a lot of people identify down on the coast of the Mediterranean, but rather this Dor is associated with cities like Iblim and Ta'anak and Megiddo. So this is in the highlands, just to the south of the Jezreel-Megiddo Valley. And in that mountain area that I was talking about, or the hilly area, immediately north of the Israeli-occupied area. And then it says, to the Canaanites in the east and the west, this is the generic overview, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Jebusites in the hill country, and the Hivites under Hermon in the land of Mizpah. Now, Hermon is Mount Hermon, which is north of Hazor. And it is the Valley of Mizpah is kind of a little pocket of fertile, flat area to the west of the southern slopes of Mount Hermon. It's just around the corner to the north from a place called Banias, one of the sources of the Jordan River. So what we've got is basically everything in northern Canaan above the occupied area of Shechem. That whole region has now come into an alliance underneath the king of Hazor. And so that apparently controls where they're going to start gathering their troops for a march southward. Verse 4 says, they came out with all their troops, a great horde, a number like the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. And all these kings joined their forces, and they came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight with Israel. Now, it is believed that the waters of Merom is a reference to the modern-day Hula Valley, which was a wetland back in the time of Joshua and his forces. In fact, it was a wetland that, during the wet season, was, I think, about half the size of the Sea of Galilee. And this wetland is immediately to the north and east of Hazor. And there's a little bit of plain that is on the southeast, no, try that again, the southwest side of this wetland, between the wetland and Hazor. And probably this is where the Allied forces are starting to gather and making their plans to then move southward along the Upper Jordan, past the Sea of Galilee, and then down along the plain that is on either side of the Jordan River, until they can arrive where the beachhead of the Israelis is located, at Gilgal, near the ruins of Jericho. Now, that's about 100 road miles from the waters of Merom near Hazor down to Gilgal. And it's somehow communicated to Joshua that this force is being put together. Now, it's not surprising. We've assumed and seen that he has spies out and about checking on things. And so he discovers that this encampment is going up. Now, Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, who has access to a lot of Jewish tradition outside of Scripture, tells us how big this accumulated alliance force was when Joshua is going to attack it. This is from Antiquities of the Jews, book number 5. And it says, "Now the whole number of the whole army was 300,000 armed footmen." So 300,000 foot soldiers. Now that is half the size of the Israeli foot soldier force. So it is massive. And 10,000 horsemen. Israelis don't use horses for fighting, so this is a rapid response force that the Israelis are going to have to deal with. And 20,000 chariots, which again, the Israelis do not have or use chariots. This is a fast reaction weapons platform, and very deadly, especially on open ground. That's the size, according to Josephus, of the force being accumulated by Yabin, the king of Hazor, up north of the Sea of Galilee. So Josephus reports that Joshua takes off with his fighting forces of Israelis and goes up the Jordan Valley, past the Sea of Galilee, and gets to the waters of Merom before the forces of the Canaanites can start moving south. It would appear that he was planning to attack them before they could start their march. Now, Joshua seems to be a little bit nervous once he's arrived and sees just how big this fighting force is. And so God steps in and reminds him he's not the one that's having to do this. It's God that will do the fighting. So Joshua chapter 11, verse 6, "He who is said to Joshua, 'Do not be afraid of them, for tomorrow at this time I will give over all of them slain to Israel.'" So God says, "Joshua, don't be looking at that big old force and being afraid of them, because by this time tomorrow, they'll be dead. I will deal with them." And then you have a follow-up that you need to do to this. The rest of the verse says, "You shall hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire." God does not want Israel to get into this mindset of military might coming from military vehicles and military engines, such as horsepower. Israelis are never supposed to have anything other than militia, just foot soldiers. They're supposed to depend completely upon God. So when they destroy the opposing force, they are to destroy the chariots, just burn them all up with fire. The horses can be used for agriculture and for transport. But to ensure that they are not used for rapid military deployments, each of the horses are to be hamstrung. At least one of their legs are to have the Achilles tendon surgically sliced, and then the horse will not be able to run. It'll still be able to pull a plow. It'll still be able to pull a cart. It can be used in all sorts of civil service, but never for military service. Verse number 7. So Joshua and all his warriors came suddenly against them by the waters of Merom and fell upon them. So exactly as he was told to do, Joshua charges into the battle with all of the forces he brought with him. And he who is gave them into the hand of Israel, who struck them and chased them as far as Great Sidon and Misrephoth Mayim, and eastward as far as the valley of Mizpah. So God gives supernatural victory to the Israelis. The allied forces of the Canaanites are broken. It is a rout. And they begin running away toward the north, past the wetlands of Hula, the waters of Merom. And one of the places they're apparently heading toward is the Valley of Mizpah, which is there at the foot of Mount Hermon. Around that same area is the entrance of Hamoth, which is going to also provide access on some roads that head northwestward towards Sidon. And some of the routed Canaanite forces head that direction. And the Israelis track them down along the way destroy them as well. And it says here, and they struck them until they left none remaining. So just like God said, by the end of the next day, the hundreds of thousands of Canaanite allied forces have been killed and the chariots destroyed. Verse 9, Joshua did to them just as he who has said to him, he hamstrung their horses and burned their chariots with fire. And then Joshua turned back at that time and captured Hazor, which, remember, is probably the largest Canaanite fortified city in the region. And it was totally unguarded now, because the majority of the forces of Hazor had been out in the encampment area to the northeast a few miles, and they're all dead. So it's just a matter of brief work, and Joshua takes the fortified city of Hazor. He struck its king with the sword, for Hazor formerly was the head of all these kingdoms. And they struck with the sword all who were in it, devoting them to destruction. There was none left that breathed, and he burned Hazor with fire. So this is part of the eviction orders that God has given to the Israelis that's to be carried out against the Canaanites. Anyone who tries to stay rather than run away are executed. And so Hazor is totally emptied of the people, executed, and then the city burned. And as I said, when I've gone to Hazor as a trip, and I hope to be there again later this year, you can see the burned layer, particularly at the palace of the upper city, clearly defined in the debris. And it's exactly in the date that we're looking at here, very close to 1400 BC. And I'm guessing that this fight took place somewhere around 1413, somewhere in that neighborhood. So now Joshua has to do the cleanup of the northern allied cities, just like he did the southern area. Now, there seem to be more cities and more area involved for this campaign, so it probably takes a few years, probably right up to 1411 BC. Verse 12, all the cities of these kings and all their kings Joshua captured and struck them with the edge of the sword, devoting them to destruction, just as Moses, the servant of He Who Is, had commanded. But none of the cities that stood on mounds did Israel burn, except Hazor alone. That Joshua burned. So the mounds that's being referred to here is what is today called Tells, T-E-L or T-E-L-L-S. They're just occupied layers that have been destroyed, and then a new city founded on top of that destruction layer. And so you eventually get this mound that's sticking up very prominent on the landscape. So Hazor is the one that was burned because it is the key city. It was a major fortified trade city. So he makes an example of it to effectively say, even the most powerful city in northern Canaan, God has given into our hands, and we burned it. We didn't even keep the stuff out of it. We just burned the stuff with it. But the rest of the cities are going to be taken and turned into Israeli cities. Verse 14. All the spoil of these cities and the livestock the people of Israel took for their plunder, but every man they struck with the edge of the sword until they had destroyed them, and they did not leave any who breathed. Just as he who is had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that He Who Is had commanded Moses. And I want to stress again, because we have soft hearts and we feel badly that these people are being killed by the Israelis, remember that they've had 500, 600 years since the time of Abraham to get their lives straight, to repent, and to quit sinning. But they haven't. In fact, they've gotten worse. And that is why God has put this order out. They are to be evicted from the land, and anyone that tries to stay will be executed, because it is the judgment of God after centuries of opportunities for repentance, which were not taken. The Israelis will have a similar situation happen to them, as God warned them through Moses, when God sends upon them the Assyrians and then later the Babylonians and kicks them out of the land because of their centuries of sin. So let's always keep this in the perspective of this is God's judgment being carried out at God's command. Verse number 16. So Joshua took all that land, the hill country and all the Negeb and all the land of Goshen and the lowland of the Arabah and the hill country of Israel and its lowland. Now this is a summary of the entire military operation of Joshua since he and the Israelis arrived in the Promised Land. So now they've taken and destroyed the key cities, or broken the key cities of all of Canaan. Verse 17 says, from Mount Halak, which rises towards Seir, which that sounds like it's clear down by Kadesh Barnea. Nobody knows exactly where this mountain is, but it's probably overlooking Kadesh Barnea, which is just across the valley from Mount Seir, which is Edom. As far as Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon below Mount Hermon. And that is possibly Peneus, which is the same place that the New Testament calls Caesarea Philippi. It's one of the sources of the Jordan River. It has a very prominent escarpment, a cliffside, which was used for the worship of pagan deities. Baal has to do with Lord. It is a term which the Canaanites used for their deities. God has to do with fortune. And so it's possible that this is a reference to Caesarea Philippi or Peneus. They're at the foot of Mount Hermon, just north of the waters of Merom, or the place where the battle just took place that we're talking about. He captured all their kings and struck them and put them to death. And Joshua made war a long time with all these kings. Now, we're talking about a few years. That's a long time. There was not a city that made peace with all the people of Israel except the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. They took them all in battle. For it was he who is his doing to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle in order that they should be devoted to destruction and should receive no mercy but be destroyed just as he who is commanded Moses. So once again, we've got this notation that this is the judgment of God. Now we jump ahead in the next verse or two to things that will happen in the future. But we're looking at a summary, so that's why it's here. Joshua came at that time and cut off the Anakim from the hill country, from Hebron, from Debir, from Anab, and from all the hill country of Judah, and from all the hill country of Israel. Joshua devoted them to destruction with their cities. These are the giants of the southern Cana region. There was none of the Anakim left in the land of the people of Israel. Only in Gaza, in Gath, and Ashdod did some remain. So that's why we will find giants in Gath later in the days of David, whereas here in the days of Joshua and Caleb, they were wiping them out around Hebron.